You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm really glad to focus on a topic with a local angle, but with far-reaching national consequences. It's been popping up more and more in my conversations and research for this show and the other things I do, teaching, etc. In fact, I had an article sent to me by multiple people over the last several weeks that is the focus of our discussion today, a very interesting article that I think our listeners will find interesting as well. The topic is the role of local newspapers in our communities and what happens when they slowly die or go away completely. It's happened where I live, and the article examines Burlington, Iowa, just down the road from here, and this is where my show actually got its start 7 years ago. And the author is a native of the area, the Burlington area, and she's now a political writer for The Atlantic magazine. She's Elaine Godfrey, and I want to welcome her to Heartland Politics. Elaine, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's very timely topic as well, and I'm just curious from your perspective. In the article, you talk about your days growing up in the area and your perspectives. But what really caused you to go back and write this article and go back to your hometown area for this perspective?
Well, so I've been wanting to write this article for a really long time. I have, noticed from afar people complaining about the Hawkeye and its changes. The Hawkeye is the name of the paper. I follow a bunch of these Facebook groups that purport to be news groups, news roundups, people in the community posting, community developments, and they're always complaining about the Hawkeye on there, the typos, the things the Hawkeye misses, how it's short, how they didn't get their paper today. So I had really just been wanting to do this for a while, and finally this spring I thought, okay, I had sort of a lull at work in my coverage of politics, and I thought I'm going to go to Iowa and do this. So I went home, did a week interviewing all these folks, and then just sort of have been working on it ever since. I've done a ton of research in the archives too, and that's just been such an eye-opening experience to go back and read what the Hawkeye used to be like, and it's in the heyday of the 70s and 80s and early 90s. I have been wanting to do it for a long time, and I'm glad I did. It certainly feels like a good time to talk about this.
Yeah, all the things you mentioned in the article, that things, changes that have happened for the worse, again, are very familiar to me because I live in an area south of the Quad Cities that's gone through this as well. The article is called What We Lost When Gannett Came to Town, and it's again, in the Atlantic magazine, which, by the way, folks, is an outstanding magazine, does some really great work. So you list some of the things. I laugh a little bit because, again, I've experienced these. Some of the changes that have occurred in the newspaper that were very obvious after it was taken over by this company. But share with us some of them, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to find this somewhat familiar.
Yeah, so I would say the first changes that we noticed were just products of them centralizing design and centralizing and frankly laying off people on the copy desk and editors. So there were just a lot of typos. There were a lot of stories, like it's sort of a frightening number of stories where you would just get to the jump where you have to, find the rest of the story on another page, and it just wouldn't continue. There was no jump. That happened a lot, and I would read about that on Facebook because obviously I wasn't living in Burlington at the time that this was at its worst, but my dad would tell me, man, I was reading this great article on the Hawkeye, and I couldn't finish it. I couldn't find the end of it. So things like that, and then, the section for local events, the Hawkeye happened section, which was all about garage sales and events. I mean, it shrunk. It got smaller and smaller and smaller, and local stories stopped appearing as often. And instead, we just had all these syndicated stuff, which has always been part of local papers' bread and butter, is stories from across the country and the world. But it just overwhelmed the paper. All of a sudden, it was way more national news than local news.
And when a paper isn't delivered, you get the call center, which is, you mm-hmm. say, is in the Philippines. I've had that happen for my mom's paper. And you get people that can't even speak English. And you're trying to explain things, and it becomes very aggravating.
Yeah, so that's a big thing, too. People are saying, I can't even get the paper. It's not coming. And they, a huge part of this is they moved, when Gatehouse came to town, they moved printing operations from the Burlington site to Peoria, which is 3 hours from Burlington. So they have an earlier deadline for getting the paper to print. I mean, I'm laughing, but it really is not.
Yeah.
It's not funny. This is a huge deal for so many people whose daily reading of the paper is such an important tradition and useful sort of thing for them.
You know what drives people nuts, too, now is, and of course, we have a lot of people interested in sports, boys and girls sports, and the fact that those aren't reported the next day. Because mm-hmm. of the tight deadline, where do you go to get your local sports news? That's another item I think that suffered with the takeover of these local newspapers.
Oh yeah, and you know, if you have a game after 8 p.m., they've already sent the paper to print, so you're not going to get that in your paper. You might be able to go online and get it, but it won't be in the paper itself. And you know, I think an even bigger issue is just they've got. At the Hawkeye, one guy and sort of one part-time guy now covering sports for all of the high schools and middle schools nearby, and it just he can't keep up with it all. And you know, I think he's doing a great job for what he can do, but he's just one guy that used to be such a robust team of reporters.
You cite some information, and I assume a lot of it's quantifiable research that's been done. Bad things that happen when a community loses its newspaper. And this is going to, this really struck me how the consequences of this. This isn't just the loss of a newspaper. The effects are wide ranging. And I'd like you to share some of those things as far as civic participation, things like that.
Yeah. So we know some of the things that happen when you lose a newspaper. People tend to focus less on local elections, local politics. They might participate less. I know there's been a recent study that said people tend to do less split ticket voting when their local paper declines, which means you start voting for one party instead of sort of evaluating the candidates on their individual merits and maybe voting for a Republican and a Democrat. And all of which is sort of the product of the nationalization of news, right? If your stories are all national now, and your local coverage is minimal, then you're going to identify more as a Democrat or a Republican rather than sort of a local person with a local stake in politics. So that's part of it. Obviously, when you lose a paper, you also lose that watchdog function. So you lose a lot of coverage of political corruption, police accountability that so many papers do. And you know, costs go up for small towns who don't have a newspaper. There have been studies that have shown that it's more expensive for town governments to take out loans if they don't have a local paper, just because, you know, it's so clear that there's no watchdog function keeping them in line. So all of these things are super important, and they've been, you know, pretty widely covered, although I don't know how aware people are of them. But my story focuses on sort of the more difficult to quantify piece of it, which is just that loss of connectivity, that loss of knowing about your neighbor when local news falls away.
Yeah, you called it the connective tissue of a community, and I, of all the things I thought of when I was reading your article, and then you talked about this, it made so much sense that we kind of know what's going on that makes us a community where we live in the same area, and it's those little things that are important.
Mm-hmm. It's the little things that don't feel important, right? Like writing about the new swimming pool or the the teddy bear picnic, which is something that I remember reading about in the paper as a kid, or heritage days, any kind of steamboat days, you know, Snake Alley Art Fair, all these things in Southeast Iowa that are so important that don't feel newsy, but, you know, those kinds of stories, local events, locally written op-eds and editorials, people arguing about local things who have a stake in those things. All of that stuff contributes to giving people a sense of place and a sense of connection with one another and a sense that sort of, you know, this part of Iowa matters. I wrote in the piece that reading about issues that affected us and reading about ourselves made us feel like we mattered and the stuff that we cared about mattered and we had something that united us. I remember that. That's the feeling I remember more than any particular story. That's what I remember from the Hawkeye growing up.
Well, in our paper, I remember too, the local editors, they always seemed to lean center right, but when they wrote opinion pieces, they explored both sides of the issue and usually came down kind of in the middle. There weren't extreme solutions. And I remember that. And I think that was great in the day because they did explore both sides, which we don't do now. We got the talking heads on cable, and it's hard to find good information, good sources that do provide kind of an objective view of these issues.
Mm-hmm. And I think so much of that is like, reporters and opinion writers for local news live in their community. They have to interact with people they disagree with all the time, and they have to like see them in the aisle at Hy-Vee and defend themselves, you know? And so, you know these people, you can trust them generally, I feel like, in a way that you can't trust some sort of talking head that you don't know, in person and haven't seen at your grocery store. I think, it's so important to have that personal local connection with people, and also just that local focus. Instead of, you know, they don't always, some local columnists argued about, you know, the Iraq war and global warming, which I write about in the piece. But they also argued about local ordinances and, you know, who has access to the new library, things like that, like things that actually matter to a place more than some of these big national issues.
And now it's just a lot of the news stories are just copied from other papers from bigger communities where there's not really a local angle, as you point out.
Yep. And I actually asked Gannett about that. I said, you know, why all of these articles from other Gannett papers? I mean, the Hawkeye is full of articles from the Register, from the Ames Tribune, et cetera, and you know, and outside of Iowa too. And they basically said, well, you know, Iowans want to read about other Iowans. They want to read about people in Ames and Des Moines. And that may be true, but they don't want to read exclusively about people living 3-4 hours away. And I think that there used to be a much better mix of that, of region and world sections, and a healthy local section, and that doesn't exist anymore. Really, it's so much smaller than it used to be.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Elaine Godfrey, who is a political staff writer at the Atlantic Magazine, and she just wrote a piece that's being talked about a lot, being shared a lot. It's called What We Lost When Gannett Came to Town. I urge everybody to access it and read it and subscribe, even better. And give thanks up here in the Quad Cities area for that you still do have some local newspapers, the Dispatch and the Times, and subscribe. Keep them going. It's important. And local radio, too. They have reporters that cover things as well. This is a very important piece beyond just the effects of a newspaper. It goes beyond that to the community and, of course, our partisan divide, which we talk about a lot these days. You point out this didn't have to happen, but first, before I get to that, I want to kind of have you talk a little bit about the storied history of the Burlington Hawkeye, which I found interesting.
Sure. So the Hawkeye was founded, I believe, in it was two different papers that were founded at a similar time. I think it was 1837. They were two different papers run by political rivals. One was, I think, a member of the Whig Party, and one was something else. And they would argue all the time. They fought over whose paper was better, whose journalism was better. Eventually, both papers were sort of wiped out by the Great Depression, and they thought, let's join forces. They merged. They became the Hawkeye. Eventually, they were purchased, I think in the 40s, by a family who owned a bunch of newspapers from Kansas, the Harris family. Now, the Harrises were, luckily, I guess, for the Hawkeye, super interested in local news. They were very, you know, benevolent rulers in this case. They bought the Hawkeye and they said, we want it to be local. We want everyone to focus on local stories. You know, we will have national news, regional news, too, but we want this to be primarily a local paper. They wanted that for all of their papers. And they owned the Hawkeye and had great success with the Hawkeye for decades. So it wasn't until 2016, actually, that the Harris family decided that they were going to put the Hawkeye up for sale. I think it was like the fourth generation of Harris kids or something who decided they didn't want to be in the news business anymore. So we put the Hawkeye up for sale. Gatehouse bought it, and I guess the rest is sort of history there.
Yeah, it happens a lot in our economy, where I have guests on, you know, talking about manufacturing plants that are bought out by bigger companies and then downsized and then wind up moving overseas or closing. That happened in newspapers too, and it's too bad. And again, we're seeing the negative impacts of that, and all these things, it seems like, kind of fit together. So the Hawkeye went from 100 paid staff to 12. I mean, that's mm-hmm. That's remarkable. That and you think of all the resources they're involved in, basics of news gathering, but also community events, that's lost to the community.
Yep. Yeah, and I think the sad thing, to get at your point about this being not inevitable, is that Hawkeye, when it was sold to Gatehouse, was profitable. They were making high teens, low 20s in profit, which is pretty good. It's not as good as the heyday of newspapers, but it's pretty dang good for a newspaper. So it wasn't that the Hawkeye was sort of, you know, struggling and flailing and this company had to buy it to sort of put it out of its misery. It was more, this company came in and said, great, let's squeeze the profits out of this thing. And that's what they did. And that's not to say that every newspaper that's been bought by a company recently hasn't been struggling, because that's not the case. I mean, the rise of the internet, social media, all of that has certainly impacted local news. People aren't reading local newspapers as much as they used to. There's just more options. And people aren't placing ads in local news as often as they were. But the Hawkeye was doing well. And Gatehouse came in and basically their model is, we're going to centralize resources. So we're going to take design and printing and move them all to one place, like moving them to Peoria, moving the design team to Texas is what they did at first. And then getting rid of all the local people doing that. So by doing this, by cutting staff, they're able to milk even more of a profit out of this newspaper and sort of bleed it dry, which is sort of what's happening now. And the question remains, you know, how long can it keep going? It's down to a dozen staff, only I think currently three news reporters. And they're covering this huge area, honestly, that the Hawkeye is supposed to be covering, and they're doing their best. And this is, I say in the piece, this is not about the reporters doing a bad job. They're right. Doing their absolute best. But it's hard to hold up a historic paper with three reporters.
You know, another angle of this that you brought up that was so interesting is that I've done a lot of work on my own for my family history and going back and looking at old newspapers. And you make the point that, who keeps track of a lot of information about families, but newspapers, and it's not there. It's like the community archive.
Yep. I went to the library and went through the archives two different times for this piece. And I worked with a local librarian at the Burlington Public Library who was wonderful. And I said, why did the archives stop in January 2019? That's you know, 2 years of two years and change that we don't have physical papers. And she said, oh yeah, they stopped sending them. It used to be that the owners would send bound copies to the library, would donate them for people to come thumb through and find old articles, and they stopped. They don't exist anymore. And I think, but even worse than that, it's just if reporters can't cover all these local stories because there are only a few of them, then these local stories are lost to time, right? Because the paper is the record of a community. And that makes me sad because it's my community. You know, I want there to be a record. I want everything written down so that people remember us and what we did. And that makes me sad that we can't keep that record and have it in physical form, or, you know, or online. It's not online either. So, I think that's a really important thing we have to remember here is that community papers serve as a, you know, as a record and a resource for people too.
I'm wondering, you know, the thought occurs to me that if this was fairly profitable, and, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was profitable, is there still an opportunity here for somebody to get back into the news business? And if so, is it, it doesn't seem to be happening. Is it because there's just a lack of interest, or did you get a chance to explore, you know, the opportunities that might exist for somebody to get into this business and kind of restore the glory days of local journalism?
Yeah, so I think much more work and reporting needs to be done on that. But I, from what I found, you can still do well in journalism if you're in an area that's growing and can support you financially. If you have money to start with, you can do it. I think you can absolutely do it. I don't know if you can make tons and tons of money, but I think you can. I think you can make money. Now, can you do it in a place like Burlington that's not growing, isn't a super wealthy area, doesn't have that sort of educated, well-off population like a growing metro might? I don't know. There's currently an effort, it's called the Burlington Beacon. Everyone should check it out. If you're in Southeast Iowa, check out the Burlington Beacon. They started, they're two former Hawkeye, reporters, who are starting their own paper. They started on Facebook to sort of try to fill this local news void. And now they have a weekly print product that's going out. They're selling it. I don't think that they're profitable. I think that they are still sort of inching along here, but I think, you know, they're doing their best, and people should absolutely support that, I think. I've read them a few times when I've tried to find local news that wasn't in the Hawkeye. Is it sustainable? I don't know, because, again, you know, Burlington's not a thriving community, really, anymore. But maybe it could be. Maybe it could be sustainable if enough people, you know, take an interest in them.
Well, statewide, there are efforts in many states, including Iowa, a nonprofit model. The Iowa Capital Dispatch with Kathy Obradovich, who used to be with the Quad City Times and Des Moines Register, is now a part of. Is that a model that might be somehow connected across region or across communities? Or did you get a chance to look into that at all?
Yeah, so I didn't look much into the nonprofit model, but I think what Kathy's doing is awesome at the Capital Dispatch. I think that's great. I think it's a really smart idea. I think there have to be creative solutions like this. I think, you know, this legislation in Congress, I forget, it's the Local News Act or something like that, Save Local News Act, where they were hoping to prop up with subsidies local news outlets, local newspapers. I think that could be helpful. I mean, it brings up questions of, you know, how much state money do you want in your newspaper? But I think all of these things need to be tried because this is such an important thing. Local news serves such an important function, and we have to find some sort of creative way to save it.
In my opinion, I just don't think social media is the answer. Facebook, it's just a toxic pool of opinions of people, which, I mean, is welcome if that's their opinions. But if you're looking for news, straight news gathering and all, I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of doubtful that that's going to provide the answer. And I know a lot of people feel differently, but I'm kind of after spending a little bit of time on it, it's easy to get depressed about where things are at, because it just funnels into this nationalization of news that you talked about.
Yep. And I, through this piece, you know, I'm in these Facebook groups that are, you know, Burlington Breaking News, Burlington Chatter, all these news groups. And I'm sure every town has the equivalent of this on Facebook, where people are talking about stuff. And you know, there's a place for, you know, I lost my dog. Can you help me find my dog on social media? That kind of thing. But, you know, people post, you know, I heard gunshots. Anybody know what that was? All the time. That is a constant thing. And it always ends up like, you know, with a thread below it on Facebook. People arguing, no, it was a car backfiring. No, it was fireworks. Well, I'm pretty sure it was a gunshot. And this is what reporters are for, right? They can make the calls. They know how to verify information. They know how to fact check things. This is the role that reporters play, and Facebook just is not that. It does not do that. That is not its purpose. And so we need something else. We need a voice of authority, and it is not the social media melee.
Final question. We got about a minute left here. On a personal level, you shared a story where you broke a promise to somebody, a reporter friend of yours, who tried to dissuade you from getting into the journalism profession. Great story. What really kept you moving forward on this from a career perspective?
That's a good question. The columnist at the Hawkeye, Mike Sweet, he was friends with my parents at the time, and he told me, Lane, don't ever be a journalist. The money's not good. The business is tanking. You know, you don't want to do this. And he's, you know, he was always kind of a grouchy guy. And I said, I promise, Mike, I won't. And just a few years later, I graduated from Iowa State journalism program, and here I am at The Atlantic, a full-blown journalist. So what made me break the promise? I don't know. I love journalism. I love telling people stories. I love writing about stuff like this. I really just like talking to people and writing about them and writing about their stories and their lives. And like this piece especially, I get to write about journalism and about community, especially my own. And this is what I do it for all the people emailing me saying, thank you for the story. You told our story too, even though I don't live in Burlington, this is my story too. And that's the reason I stayed.
I don't generally support breaking promises, but in this case, it's a good one, right? Well, you did a terrific job on this, and I think it's a great article, and I'm going to continue to share it with others as well. I hope our listeners, again, take a look at it. It's called What We Lost When Gannett Came to Town. It's in The Atlantic. My guest today has been the author of that piece, Elaine Godfrey, who's from Iowa, down in the Burlington area. And Elaine, thank you so much for being on, and we'll continue to follow your work in The Atlantic.
Thank you so much, Robin, and thanks for your kind words. I appreciate it.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at wvik.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.